is going on, Suns fans? Justin here, and with me, as always, is my podcasting partner, Paul.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for ever listening to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
A simple no would have sufficed. Boom, Rocket Paul. All right, and welcome to this episode of Fanning the Flames, your one and only Phoenix Suns podcast that is made for the fans. That's you guys, by the fans, that is us.
Trademark, copyrighted, all that crap.
Yes, indeed. Intro and outro music, as always, presented by Oceans Over Airplanes. Check them out over at oceansoverairplanes.com. And throw it out there immediately. Rate and review on iTunes. Rate and review in the comments section if you can do that. Leave us comments on Twitter. We'll read those. We'll throw them out there. We'll give you guys a little bit of cred for giving us some cred as well. Shout out to Solar Panel for allowing us to steal that concept from them. All right.
And the other ones we will steal throughout the rest of the time.
Many, many more. And I'm still working on just stealing Espo entirely from them.
I think we have a better shot at Dave.
Why? I'm interested. This is interesting.
Well, he's our boss.
Okay.
I think he might like us better.
Than Espo does? Are you saying Espo doesn't
no,
like
Ben
us?
No, Ben, Espo, and Tim.
Oh, that's... I'm gonna move on. This got weird really quickly. Okay. Anyway, so Phoenix Suns. Let's talk Phoenix Suns, Paul.
Yeah, they've done stuff.
Then the biggest thing to come to light is the Devin Booker surgery.
Yeah.
Booker had surgery today. Today?
Today.
Today on his right hand. Yes. It was announced on Sunday and kind of came out of nowhere.
Kinda, yeah.
He had some issues towards the end of the season, but I don't think anybody's really thought about that since that point in time.
Right, because, I mean, he went through the USA minicamp and whatnot and seemed to be playing really well. Exactly.
There was no indication that there were any
lingering
any inflammations of that. Ultimately, Ryan McDonough was on, I think, Gambo and Burns and Gambo today, and said that it just flared up and swelled up during some pickup play as of late. I think initially it bears noting that it came on Sunday. This news came on Sunday, which was an incredibly shitty day for Arizona sports.
Just a bit.
I mean, it was horrendous. This past Sunday, you had the Cardinals just get absolutely decimated by the Redskins.
And you had just come off U of A.
We don't need to talk about U of A, okay? Kevin Sumlin has a master plan. Calm down.
For 7 years down the road.
U of A lost on Saturday yet again and got decimated as well and got embarrassed. ASU picked up a nice win.
Yeah, I know.
Although
I may have to eat some crow.
ASU basketball also started 12-0 and was number 2 in the nation earlier this year. So ASU fans, tap your brakes a little bit. I'm just going to say that.
I mean, I'm not super sold on Herm Edwards yet, but he may change my mind.
Hey, you know what? You can't complain about beating a top 15 team, a number 15 team. But again, 12-0, number 2 in the nation, and then
ranked.
Moving on. The Cardinals, again, decimated on Sunday. The Diamondbacks were just an absolute shit show right now. Blew yet another game where they had a lead.
They're
and blew
it. Mets.
And blew it, like, in epic fashion.
Yeah.
They walked into, I believe they went into the top of the ninth with a 2-run lead and gave up 6 runs that inning, if I recall correctly.
Sounds very Mets-y.
I believe it was 5-3, and then they gave up 6. And those 6 came on like just absurd bombs. And then as that was all settling in for Arizona sports fans, we get the news that Devin Booker is having surgery. And the worst part of it was initially it came out and it said out indefinitely.
Yeah.
Indefinitely is like the worst word you can use in sports.
Is the surgery to replace his hand with somebody else's hand? Is he going to come back with a hook?
I think we all recognize he wouldn't come back with a hook, but
maybe one of those highlight things.
Oh, you know, that's like the biggest sport in the Philippines. You know that, right?
No, I did not know that.
Now you do. As a half Filipino, I'm proud to announce that. So, but yeah, no, the Booker injury or Booker surgery came out of the blue, concerned, I think, a lot of people. But ultimately, it looks like at this point, he's going to be out 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is going to be detrimental, but not nearly as detrimental as I think people perhaps thought it was going to be initially when it was announced. Just because there was so much confusion, so much lack of information around it initially. Again, came out of nowhere, indefinitely was put in the right. tweet, and you didn't know what kind of surgery, you didn't know what was the time frame for return. It was just very, very confusing and concerning.
And after some of the other moves that we'll talk about shortly that have happened with the Suns, the whole backcourt situation is now thrown up in the air, and I think that's what a lot of people were even worried about even more. But, I mean, from a personal perspective, I just wanted to speak on it just from the perspective of I had shoulder surgery this year, and this was based off an injury that was well over a year old that I was dealing with. So I'm not surprised that sometimes this happens where you're going along, you progress, you regress, you kind of get back up. And then like at a certain point, it's like, okay, we've done all our other options. Surgery is the next step. And that's what I got to. So, I mean, being that it was an injury back in March or whatever, and he's only getting surgery now, and we're wondering why didn't he do it sooner. The knife is not the first thing you want to go to.
Sure.
So they try, and the Suns have a very good training staff. So they're going to go through the processes. They're going to go through all the other options before they have to cut him open and like really sideline him for a serious amount of time. And I trust that that's what they did. And they just determined that the ups and downs are enough that like, okay, there's something more in there. We got to actually go get in there and physically fix.
It finally crossed a line where they said rehab, rest, shots, whatever is not working. So let's go ahead and have the surgery done. That makes sense. That's fine. And I mean, there is some concern, at least I think initially there was, and I'm sure there still is, over the fact that they waited so long.
Right. But, and he did just sign the contract. Right, and it's like, did they wait till he signed the contract before he told them that it was hurt enough that he needed to do the surgery? There's like, it's like a concern that I saw out there as well.
Yeah, and I think that's less of a that's not really a concern for me. Right. I mean, my concern is, could this have been nipped in the bud earlier, and then not cost him training camp, not cost him the preseason, not cost him possibly games into the regular season,
right?
And had it resolved earlier. But again, like you said, not that we're doctors. But based on Paul's personal experience, which I'm sure is very comparable to Devin Booker's.
Right, yes, because I'm an elite athlete.
it does make sense not to jump to the surgery immediately and see what can happen. Especially, you know, if it was a situation where things are, you know, there's discomfort, there's swelling. There are ways to go about that without going into the surgery option. But at the same time, again, if it's a 6 week time frame for the surgery recovery, like, why not do it?
It's not the worst time.
Right.
I mean,
it's not like Tommy John surgery where you sit there and go, okay, well, maybe we don't have to do this, but if we do, he's out for a year.
Right. And it's not like it's like a Shaq situation here where he's like, I got hurt on company time, I'm getting healed on company time.
Right. Sure. Sure.
You don't remember that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, he had to get like foot surgery, and he waited till like the beginning of the season to do it. And his excuse was, "I got hurt on company time."
God bless. God bless you, Shaq. God bless you, Shaq. I guess I don't know. you know, one thing though, I do want to talk about, and this is probably really neither here nor there, but it has been circulating around Suns Twitter over the past couple of days, and that is the speculation that was created by this radio show, Kenny and Crash, which I had never heard of before. They're on 9:10 a.m. I haven't listened
to
them.
Who listens to a.m.?
It still exists. Who would have known? I mean,
between satellite and...
I thought a.m. went out with that...
and KTAR.
With that song by... oh, my gosh.
I don't know.
The guy... Yeah, Hold on.
Start singing it.
They sing Santa Monica. They sing
Everclear.
Everclear, yes. They had a song called AM Radio. But anyway, okay.
I was Kenny just listening Crash. To Santa Monica when I went to go get yogurt before you showed up.
That's a great song. So Kenny and Crash, particularly Crash Gladys, and I don't know, are we supposed to like talk shit about other radio? Like, we can do this, right? I don't know.
I think so.
Dave, if you feel the need to edit this, then you can edit it and not post it, I guess. But Crash Gladys posted yesterday on Twitter, at Woj, "Hey Woj, it's coming clear now, trying to verify if Suns Devin Booker fell off of his unicycle yesterday. There is video out there, parentheses, I'm not kidding, close parentheses, but we're still working to get it, just FYI."
They haven't gotten it yet, as far as I can tell.
They haven't, because there is no video of a unicycle.
No.
Because she followed that with a tweet where she posted the video of Booker riding a bike. Like a bike. Like, and everyone does.
And not even like a BMX bike. It was like a beach cruiser.
He was driving down a
road. Nice street in Coronado.
No, it was definitely in the Arcadia area.
You sure? Because I think the rest of this...
Camelback Mountain was right there, yes. So, and she tweets out, "There you go, Suns fans. No full clarification yet if he fell after this video, and that is why he is requiring surgery. But the timing is beyond coincidental. We will update you on Fox Sports 910 as we find out more." And again, the video is clearly him riding a bicycle. So somebody called her out saying, "Are you reporting that that is a unicycle?" To which she responds, "Looks like a bike to me, but we have been saying unicycle on the show all afternoon and having fun with it."
That's good journalism.
Let's just have fun with it. "I've seen it written as unicycle and as bicycle. I don't care what it was, what it is or was. He was reckless." Mind you, she spelled reckless, WRECKLESS. Like there's not a wreck. Anyway. Can we just like what the fuck this, Paul? Like, like they turned this into something that was absolutely nothing. Like the unicycle thing. Apparently, maybe somebody, I don't know, texted her or tweeted her about it, and she just ran with it. That's insane to me. And I'm not saying that you and I are like the quintessential picture of journalistic integrity. But guess what? We're not freaking journalists.
We're not paid for it.
Yet we're still. We still do our job with more integrity, I feel, than they did based on what they ran out there with. I mean, two weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, whatever it was, like I forced you to say, "Hey,
that's a Kevin prediction.
Durant is coming to the Suns."
That's but you a know prediction.
What? We were at least more accurate because Kevin Durant plays basketball and the Suns are a basketball team. Here they're saying he was quote unquote reckless by using a unicycle that apparently doesn't even exist. Like the whole thing is so freaking shocking to me. How does, and people give Gambo shit about saying stuff. And
he's got sources and he doesn't
my mess God. Up
too much.
My God. I was just shocked by the whole thing.
Yeah, it was definitely a whole waste of energy and data to look at that stuff. It's really just a situation of, and then she's talking about he's reckless because he rode a bike. I mean, yes, there are clauses on NBA contracts about you can't do certain things. You can't go skydiving. You can't ride a motorcycle, not a bicycle, a motorcycle, because it goes too fast. And
Jason Williams. The
statistics are just there that it's bad. I mean, Jason Williams is a perfect example. He ruined his career over a motorcycle accident. I'm pretty sure a bicycle's not in there. Skateboarding might be.
Maybe.
There's some stuff in there, but I mean, there were literally pictures and videos of the entire Suns team riding bikes this past 2 days. They were doing it as a team. So.
Yeah, there's a.
They were making fun of George King.
after Book's surgery, he posted a picture. It was on NBA on TNT's Twitter account.
Oh, was it?
Him sitting in the plane. Like the kind of
laid out on the
laid
PJs,
out on the, you know, like the couch. The bed. There was a seatbelt right there, no seatbelt on. I was like, oh, look out. Yeah. More reckless activity from Devin Booker. And my other problem with it is, and again, maybe this is me just being a lawyer, but like calling somebody reckless is a pretty significant allegation. Like that's saying he's showing a disregard for his contractual obligations, for his professional responsibilities, etc. And I think that's just absurd. Absurd, Paul. Absurd.
Absurd.
Absurd. And I would welcome, I'll say this right now, if Crash Gladys wants to talk about this with us, I'm more than happy to hear her side of the story. But it seems like they tried to start something, turned out it was false, and then she tried to say it was basically they're just, you know, she messing around it with back, it. Yeah. Come on.
I don't think I'm going to be tuning in.
I haven't, and I probably won't either. Maybe it's a good show. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let us know if you listen to it and if we should.
Yeah. Yeah, if anybody out there listens to this show, let us know what you think about it. I'm interested.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear it. Okay. I'm gonna get off of this now.
Last thing. You mentioned the picture that was posted.
Mm-hmm.
I had one minor concern about Ooh. That photo.
Go on. I know what you're going
to
say. Go
the
on.
The caption to it, he said, I'm paraphrasing it because I don't remember the exact words, but he said, first surgery in the books.
Right.
That's a bit concerning to me. Just because all we've heard about was he's having surgery and he'll be back in 6 weeks. Nothing about a follow-up surgery.
Right.
Or that this might be multiple procedures. When I hear follow-up surgery, I hear longer time period than six right. weeks. Again, coming from somebody who had surgery and knew how long it took to rehab it.
Right. I saw that, obviously, and my read of that was I don't recall with any of Booker's past injuries if he's ever had surgery. So my thought is, this is a 21-year-old kid that maybe this is the first time he's ever actually had surgery. And he's saying, first surgery is success, saying, this is the first time it happened, it all went well, I'm good. Ryan McDonough was on, like I said earlier, on
Gambo,
Gambo and Burns, Burns and Gambo. I think it was Burns and Gambo. Could have been Bickley and Murata. But anyway,
yeah.
He was on 98.7 one way or the other. And he didn't make mention of any second surgery. I would imagine that if there were going to be follow-up procedures, the Suns would say something about that, because especially in light of Booker's post,
right?
Because if there was going to be a second surgery, knowing how Suns Nation is right now in terms of the Suns, I mean, we have some cautious optimism right now with the draft, maybe some pessimism with some of the trades that have happened and with the point guard position. But overall, it seems like the timeline is starting to play out as we anticipated playing out.
We're on the upswing.
We're on the upswing, hopefully.
And we don't want to see it derailed.
Right. And if there was any reason to think that Booker was actually going to have a subsequent surgery after the one he's already had, I believe that McDonough would be forthright about that and would have made some sort of comment in that regard. And he didn't, at least as far as I can recall from listening to that conversation. So I think you're perhaps reading too much into it. Maybe I'm wrong. You could be right, but I'm certainly hoping you're not, because if they're saying it's a six week recovery time frame, if there's going to be another surgery, you would think it would be longer than 6 weeks.
Right. Exactly. And that's kind of really pretty much where I was coming from.
Okay. So anyway.
Yeah.
So Booker's out for at least 6 weeks. Again, I think there's some expectation that that's going to extend at least into perhaps the beginning of the season. I think the biggest problem with that is, based on how the Suns roster stands right now, and based on what McDonough said during his interview today,
right?
They're comfortable, quote unquote, comfortable running Okobo, Harrison, etc. out there as the one, as right. the point guard.
That might just be damage control, though.
Very well could be, and you know, they've been obviously discussing potential trades, and maybe there's more activity than we're aware of, but let's just assume for the sake of this conversation that that's what's going to happen. That there's not going to be a trade. And as much as like I relegated myself to the idea of Brandon Knight being our point guard to start the season, I'm similarly relegating myself to the concept that the Suns are going to be going into this upcoming season with the roster that they currently have in place.
Right.
The problem then becomes Booker missing training camp, preseason. That's a big piece of your offense that's not going to be there to integrate himself in Kokoschkov's new offense. And if you're expecting him to play a role of a, you know, James Harden light, if you will, from a couple years ago before they got Chris Paul, that's a, you know, a primary / 1A, 1B ball handler.
Right.
Not being there to get his arms wrapped around the offense, get everybody else used to him controlling the flow of the game for whatever extent he's going to be doing it.
It's like driving a car without a steering wheel.
Right, and that's bad news. I mean,
yeah.
No other way to put that. Right?
Right, yeah. I mean, I was waiting for something else there.
Nope.
But yeah, it's, I mean, it's definitely a concern from that standpoint of whatever is put in during training camp is being put in without the biggest cog in the machine. So all the different things they're bringing in, I mean, yeah, Booker's going to be there. He's going to be watching film. He's going to be learning it. But to the extent that he's physically learning how to move within it, that's not happening. And that's going to have to happen during actual games. And hopefully it works. He's a really smart player. And I think his skill set lends itself a bit to a motion offense. So I think he'll pick up a lot of it pretty quickly. But at the same time, you know, when you're trying to build a system that, for all intents and purposes, kind of is designed to almost, yes, it's motion, but it's also going to be running around a given player, and like everybody's motion is based off of what he does. Mm-hmm. Installing that for the rest of the team without him there is also going to be really hard. I mean, it's basketball, and these coaches are really smart, and they've been doing it forever, and they've dealt with injured players and not having key pieces and whatnot. They know how to work with that. I think it'll all work out, but it may put a kink into the potential attempts to have a quick start to the season.
Sure.
And kind of get out in front and whatnot. I mean, I don't want them to tank again this season. They don't want to tank this season. Management doesn't want him to tank this season. The rest of the fans don't want him to tank this season. I'm just afraid that as they go through those growing pains that would potentially happen during training camp, they get to the point where like, oh, maybe we should tank this season and get Zion.
Yeah, and that's a whole different topic. I mean, Zion is a physical specimen. There's no doubt about that. My initial thoughts on him is I'm a little concerned about what's at least perceived as a lack of an outside shot. Although in their scrimmage or, you know, exhibition game recently, he showed some ability to shoot from outside. But let's not delve into that.
No,
that's a whole.
let's save that for post All-Star game.
But I mean, you look at it because if Booker's out those 6 weeks and he's not going to be there for training camp, he's not going to be there for preseason. I mean, you can't expect this team then to kind of quote unquote hit their stride, regardless of what level that stride is at, but not be fully integrated until at least, I would think, 8 weeks, if not more, into the season. You know, because him missing 6 weeks is during the, including training camp and preseason, is much different than him missing 6 weeks in the middle of the season.
Because, right.
Again, implementing a new offense, getting the players used to each other, there's invaluable time in that training camp, in that preseason, that he's not going to be able to participate in. So we might be looking at a situation where this team isn't really running on full capacity until end of November into December.
Right.
And
yeah,
like you said, there goes any potential for a fast start. And I use fast start
loosely
and within the context of what a fast start would be for the Suns.
Fast start would be 500.
Right. So
I'm not expecting them to rattle off 17 wins in a row.
Yeah, but hey, you know what?
Miracles have happened.
Those 0-3, 0-4 Suns, nobody thought they were going to win 62 games. So
hey, Elie Okobo
No, that was 04 or 05. 03 or 04 was...
Close enough. I got one of the years right.
Yeah. Hey, Elia Kobo could be the French Steve Nash.
You know, to that point, McDonough did speak very highly of Okobo today. And, of course, he's not going to rag on a guy, but at the same time, you would think that he's not going to talk a guy up, especially a rookie coming in from another league who was a second-round draft pick,
right?
If he didn't truly have some faith in him. And obviously take that with a grain of salt because McDonough is the GM of the Suns, and his job is kind of on the line as we're going into this season because it is now his team. There's
right.
no excuse. There's no, our rebuild got held back by a few years because we almost made the playoffs one year and changed direction, et cetera, et cetera. This is his team. But he did say today during that interview, quote, "We're very high on Elia Kobo. He's looked terrific in pickup games we've had so far. Melton, we thought, was one of the better rookies in summer league, and guys like Shaq Harrison and Isaiah Cannon played very well for us a year ago. We have depth there," being at the point guard position. "I realize we don't have a lot of experience there." So if they stick with the lineup that they currently have, with the roster that they currently have, they are relying on these guys to show more than what one would expect them to do.
Right.
Considering what we've seen from Shaq Harrison, what we've seen from Isaiah Cannon, and what we would expect from rookies like D'Anthony Melton and Elia Kobo. Which kind of, I think, leads into, you know, this whole Ryan Anderson, D'Anthony
Brandon
Melton,
Knight.
Brandon Knight, Marquise Chris trade. Now, this is old news at this point.
Right.
And we've been away, so understandably so, it's old news, but the biggest issue that everyone has had with that trade is, okay, Brandon Knight, maybe not the best dude to have starting at the one. Maybe
but
not the ideal
start
guy.
At the one. We know what we're getting.
Right, but presumably if he got back to anywhere near Brandon Knight of
Milwaukee,
then he's still better, presumably, than what the Suns now currently have on their roster. And, you know, that trade was, it was an interesting trade. I think that the fact that Ryan Anderson agreed to reduce his guaranteed salary for 2019-2020 to the same level of Brandon Knight's made it a little more palatable for Suns fans. But the interesting thing that I took out of that trade, particularly, again, in light of McDonough's interview today, was why they made the trade. And in speaking about that today, McDonough said, again, quote, "A big part of it, not only with Marquise, but with Brandon as well, with Igor Kokoschkov and his staff coming in, they have new philosophies. They have a very high-level offensive system that I think our fans will really enjoy watching because it's really impressive and has proven to be effective over time." The key part of that to me was the quote, "high-level offensive system." That means something to me, him saying that. Paul, does that mean something to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a first thing that comes to my mind with that is Marquise Chris. I mean, that's always been a concern with him, is that he's got a bunch of physical tools, but the basketball IQ is not there. I mean, you saw it in his foul rate. And that was a combination of, I think, a little bit of IQ. A little bit it's the natural IQ, a little bit of it's just his lack of experience because he only played basketball for a couple of years before he
went to Washington.
Went to Washington and then to the NBA after only a single year in college. And then just his lack of focus in general. So a combination of that, I don't know if he would pick up the nuance, or maybe they were seeing that in what they were trying to, you know, passively install over the summer during like pickup games and training sessions and whatnot, and be like, hey, here's the basic principles that you're going to see once we get into training camp and we really start to install this offense. And he just like wasn't grasping them. Knight, he's a smart guy. He's a really, really smart dude. And I think he actually does have a pretty high basketball IQ. I think he might also just have an issue of he's stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent, and he want like, yeah, he may know the right thing to do, but he knows the thing he wants to do, and those may conflict. in that he knows this is my style of play and his style of play. He may be more of a style, whereas Marquise is more of a substance issue.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I mean, and to your point about Knight, I will admit I was disappointed in seeing him trading Knight, only because...
Would like to give him a shot.
Give him a shot. He, based on all reports we've seen, has embraced the, I need to be a leader, I need to adjust my game, I need to be a team player type guy, particularly in light of the roster the Suns currently have put together. And I would have liked to see what he could do with this Suns roster.
I think he's probably in the best possible situation for him, though.
Well, sure.
I mean, you're on a contender. You're going to be the third guard, and you're going to be playing with a Hall of Fame player pretty much at all times. And you may even get some pretty decent run because Chris Paul might get injured.
Right.
It's pretty consistent.
Happen. Yeah.
Granted, you'll still probably be playing more off guard, but,
that might not be a bad thing.
It might not be a bad thing. And the way their offense is run, they're used to kind of... They actually have kind of figured out the two-point guards thing better than the Suns were able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he may be in a pretty good situation, and Chris might be in a pretty good situation too. I mean, granted, he's going to get rode by Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to be fun.
Yeah.
But Chris Paul and James Harden also are amazing passers who will get him so many highlight dunks.
Right.
And that's all they're going to ask him to do. Is run the floor, rebound, and get highlight dunks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think it's a good situation for both those guys. I agree with you. And I had said before recently that when it came to the whole Chris, and this is one thing. Thank God the Chris Bender debate's now over in Phoenix, at least, right?
Right.
For better or worse, and I've said it as of late that. If I had to pick between one of the two, I had started leaning towards Chris. Just because we knew that Chris went through all of last season out of shape until towards the end of the season when he finally started to actually put some things together. So, you know, I wasn't quite at the point as some Suns fans were in terms of willingness to give up on Chris. But you know what? It's done. It is what it is. And the Suns have to, you know, obviously move forward based on where the roster stands now. Which then, of course, raises the question that everyone has been thinking, and that is, what are the Suns going to do? Are they going to really... Again, I've relegated myself to the idea that they're going into the season with the roster they have.
It's going to be an open competition in training camp.
Yeah, and I mean, I say that because you look at the assets that the Suns have, they could potentially trade to maybe get a point guard. And you look at what point guards might be available out there. And I don't know that I see a ton of value in the return for what the Suns could give up.
Or at least that the fans are willing to give up.
Right. I mean, if the Suns are going to make a move, and I love Josh Jackson, obviously.
Obviously.
But if the Suns are going to make a move for a point guard, I say they have to go all in. They have to go all in and put Jackson in there, put whatever draft picks they need to put in there. And go after a Damian Lillard. Go after a Kemba Walker. Do whatever. But if it's going to be something less than that, from my perspective, why bother? Because is anybody that's less than that going to make the team that much better? And you've got Kemba going into a contract year. Maybe at the trade deadline, his value is a little bit... I won't say his value is less, but the Hornets perhaps are willing to take less because they need to get something in return as opposed to him walking.
Right.
Or alternatively, he's a free agent next year.
Right. Well, because I mean, with what the Suns currently have at the point guard position is a bunch of flotsam. We don't know what it is.
A bunch of what?
Flotsam. Flotsam and jetsam. Bunch of stuff.
I've never heard that. I've literally never heard that. I'm sure it's a saying. I've just never heard it.
So
I'm going to use that.
It's just a bunch of stuff.
No, just
that we don't really know what we've got. And hey, we may have a diamond in the rough there and some guy may turn into something, but it's all rookies or very inexperienced guys who just don't have the reps to just keep an offense under control, and that could really derail the season. Mm-hmm. So even from a and it also seems like the goal is to build the offense around Booker. Booker is the crux of the offense. He is going to be, like, think the old Kobe Lakers days where, like, the offense really ran around him. The point guard
was there.
Was there.
Derek Fisher.
For a long time.
Right.
And he had a role, and he fit into that role. So, and we've talked about it in the past, that's why some of the guys like Patrick Beverley and whatnot have come up as potential trade targets, because they're not we're not expecting to bring in Chris Paul. We're not expecting to bring in Steve Nash. I mean, there's a history of the Suns of we've had a lot of great point guards. So as a fan base, we want the best. We want those flat. We want the next Jason Kidd. We want the next Steve Nash. We want the next Kevin Johnson, on and on and on. That may not be what's best for this team right now based on how it's being constructed. Having a point guard who has some defensive capacity to cover for Booker, can initiate, is comfortable enough in his skill set that can initiate an offense, particularly on like a fast break, but at the same time isn't expected to be the one to run the whole show, because that's going to be Booker.
Right.
So having one of those mid-level guys who kind of does fit that role, say, like I said, a Patrick Beverley type, could be the level we can look for, and with the assets we have available, might be much more attainable.
Sure. I got you. And, you know, again, we'll see where things go with the Suns. I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe a move will occur, but again, I just hope it's the right move. I don't want them to make a move for the sake of making a move at this point, because there's really no point in that. I get it that there's a glut on the wing, but
massive glut
in this day and age in the NBA, having wing players isn't a bad thing.
Right, it's not, but it's just, I mean, even with the Ryan Anderson trade, you know, we went from going for most of the summer thinking that Trevor Ariza was probably going to be playing a lot of stretch four, and he probably will, which would have then allowed open up those minutes at the three spot and even some at the two spot, with Booker sliding to point for Bridges, for Jackson, for Warren, that we could kind of make it work.
Mm-hmm.
But now you bring in Ryan Anderson, and then you've got Bender behind him, you've got Ayton and Chandler at the five. And on the other side, point guard is a point guard. But unless we're moving Booker half its time, 65% of his time, to the one spot, he's the logjam 35, 36 minutes at the two spot, with the backup being maybe Mikal Bridges, maybe Josh Jackson. Troy Daniels is in there too. Maybe Davon Reed shows us some stuff. He showed some stuff in summer league. Maybe he, now that he's healthy, can show some stuff in the league. That leaves, was it five guys at that three spot? It's just something.
Well, at the 2-3 spot, right?
No, like, okay, so you got Booker here. You got Bender and Chris on the other side. There's no, Chris? Bender Bender and Anderson.
So natural to say Bender and Chris, right?
Right. We'll get used to it. Like, it's still so natural to say San Diego Chargers. So now you're sitting at the small forward spot. You got Ariza, who we're assuming starting. Then you got Warren, who has started. Jackson, who has started. Bridges. And so, am I missing one? Or is that everybody at this point?
That's everybody. Yes.
But so you've got four guys who all probably deserve minutes. I mean, I think probably furthest down that level is Mikal Bridges, but I mean, they've got a lot of promise with him and hope with like what he brings to the team as that kind of 3-and-D guy who maybe even kind of steps out of that role a little bit too, right, just now that he's in the NBA.
Well, and I see Troy Daniels as being the odd man out there.
Oh, definitely.
Because I think ultimately you're going to see Booker play the one at some, you know, let's call it 15 minutes a game even, right?
Yeah.
So then you've got Booker, Bridges, Jackson, Ariza, that could all, I think, really move within the 2-3
Right, and even some of them can move down to the four a little bit, too.
Exactly. So I think there's a way to spread those minutes around. There's going to have to be somebody who's, you know, a casualty of war there, and I think that's going to be Troy Daniels.
Right.
Which I think...
But you did, in all that talk, you didn't even mention Warren.
Oh, I meant to include Warren there, too. So that's still five guys playing for, we'll call it two and a quarter spots. Yeah, exactly. I think there's a way to do that. But ultimately, maybe it means that at some point, one of those guys is going to have to be moved. And it gets back to the point that I brought up earlier, is if it's going to be a move for a point guard, and it's going to be a franchise-changing point guard, well, okay, that's maybe an exaggeration, but a high-level starting point guard, and it's going to happen before the season, it's going to have to be Jackson that gets moved.
I can see that.
If it's going to happen later in the year, closer to the trade deadline, you might be able to do it with Warren instead.
Yeah, and use picks.
And exactly.
Particularly when you're starting to get a little bit more clarity of what the pick range is going to be.
Pick range is going to be what Bridges is bringing to the team, what Jackson is bringing to the team based on any development he has. Because, I mean, let's be honest, Jackson's summer league was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah, but major regression.
I think his summer league, again, like I've said before, was a parallel to what he did the first half of last season. That was try to do way too much.
Right.
He needs to play within himself and let the game come to him.
He's third
guy. That's what he has to do. Yeah, exactly. And he was trying to be the number one guy during summer league. So, but you know, all of this and the talk about potential trades and whatnot brings me to a point that you brought up before we started recording, and that is an interesting trade idea that, and maybe we can just you know pull the Crash Gladys here and just report that it's going to happen. Right?
I'm not doing that yet.
Okay. Well, Paul, hey, you know, but why don't you delve into that? Because I don't want to steal any of your thunder and take any of the concept away from you, because you brought this up. I initially was in firm disagreement.
And then we started doing some math.
And then we started doing math, and I became much, much more enticed by the concept.
We were talking in our prep for the show, in between watching old music videos and discussing our fantasy league. The idea of those kind of mid-range point guards that could potentially be available, and like the ones that everybody's talked about, like with like the Milos's, the Patrick Beverleys, even like
Corey Joseph,
Spencer Didwitty's. Like once you get into that, the one that I brought up to Justin before we were before the show started was George Hill.
To which I immediately responded,
like, fuck
he's
no.
He's making $19 million bucks a year, and he is 32 going on 33.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then I made my argument. And so my argument pretty much started with, I looked at their roster, and the Cavaliers roster, they're very light at the small forward position.
Mm-hmm.
So centering a trade around TJ Warren fills a little bit of that need, and his game would, I think, could complement Kevin Love's, who they just re-signed to an extension.
Mm-hmm.
So he can step in at the small forward spot.
And they can do away with a point guard.
Right. They have a handful. And on top of that, we also have the Darrell Arthur contract.
Mm-hmm.
Or messing around with the trade machine, Troy Daniels could work for this too. So we could kill two birds with one stone and get two of those guys out of that small forwards shooting guard logjam by sending either just TJ Warren and Darrell Arthur, TJ Warren, Darrell Arthur, and Troy Daniels, or just TJ Warren and Troy Daniels. Something in that combination to the Cavs for George Hill. He makes $19 million, yes. He's only guaranteed $1 million next year.
Right.
Next year.
It's $18 million next year, but $1 million guaranteed.
So he is that level of point guard. He's a vet who isn't really expected to run the offense. He never really did. I mean, in his Pacers days, he was kind of second fiddle to Paul George in that sense when you looked at that roster. Same thing when he was playing in San Antonio, you know, his time in
Utah,
Sacramento, etc. He's not really that lead guy, so he could fit that role. He's a pretty solid defender. His percentages, his stats, also pretty solid across the board. He's a dependable guy who I think would really fit that role. And he clears $18 million off the books next year. Mm-hmm. So when we're looking at going into a season where there's a number of potential max free agents.
Kevin Durant.
on that list, up and available to sign with teams. And we're looking at a team that's wanting to build, to grow, to become a potential destination for those guys. He helps open up that cap space that we could sign them. And I think he would also help from the perspective of being that steadying force to help run that offense and keep everybody in line and follow the principles of Igor's offense.
Yeah, and I've obviously been a big proponent of the whole concept of having veterans teach younger players, whether they be rookies or, you know, second, third, fourth year guys, the ropes in the NBA. Not only in terms of the game, but in terms of how to...
The business.
Yeah, the business. The how life. How to carry yourself, how to handle yourself. And I think that for all intents and purposes, based on any reports out there, George Hill is a consummate professional. The kicker for me with that, which made me change my mind about this being a hell no idea to a, that's intriguing, is freeing up of cap space. Because you've got Chandler coming off the books next year. You've got Ariza coming off the books next year. And if you were to take Hill and him only having $1 million guaranteed and you let him go, a couple other moves, suddenly, boom.
Right.
There's 35, 36, cap space close to $40 million. For a max player. And that's intriguing. And even if it's not a max player,
then it's, you've got two cap or three space, pretty good. Right.
Exactly.
Players that help round out the team.
So that certainly makes it enticing, because I think ultimately, again, one of these wings at some point is going to have to go. And if it means that it's TJ Warren with other guys thrown in, right, whether it be Arthur or Daniels or both, and it means that we can free up cap space for next offseason.
Right.
Dang. Why not?
Why not?
Why not? So that really is a trade that makes more sense to me than any other trade for a younger point guard, because even with some of these younger point guards that have been floated around out there, you know, aside from a Damian Lillard or a Kemba Walker, you're still kind of taking a shot on a guy who hasn't quite proven himself.
Right, and coming up on a payday.
Right.
That's going to affect your cap space and whatnot.
Right, and again, with the free agent class that we're looking at next season, if you can free up cap space, and I think George Hill, notwithstanding the fact that he's bounced around the league and he's towards the latter part of his career, I think he still would be, based on what we know, an upgrade over the guys that are on the roster right now. Right. And when I say based on what we know, the only person that I put out there as a question mark and unknown is Elia Kobo, because he showed flashes during summer league, but that's summer league.
Well, I mean,
he
also Melton's also showed
flashes during summer league, but again, it's summer league,
right?
And these guys are going to have to adjust the league, and having somebody help steer them into that direction, help ease that adjustment is I think advantageous. Again, I've likened it before to starting quarterbacks in the NFL. When you have a high draft pick that starts at that's going to be a quarterback, a high draft pick quarterback, the old trend was always to give them time, give them a year, give them maybe two years to learn the system, to get used to the speed of the league, etc.
Give the team time to develop a line around them too.
Right. That's fallen off a bit recently, and I think, you know, a couple teams are trending back into that direction now. To the detriment of players. Right, exactly. So
I mean, the whole RG3 situation was because he... Yeah.
Right, right. And you look at Baker Mayfield right now is not starting. Josh Allen, who I think is going to suck anyway, but he's not starting.
Josh Rosen.
Could those guys all be starting sometime later this year? Yeah, they could be, but it's advantageous to them to have somebody help ease that progression, ease that transition into professional sports. And I think that George Hill could do that very well with somebody like Elia Kobo, with somebody like D'Anthony Melton. And again, if that comes together with freeing up a significant amount of cap space next year, seems like a good move to me.
I mean, honestly, my biggest concern about possibly trading for George Hill is how things ended in Sacramento. Is he signed with Sacramento for a massive amount of money, thinking that their intention was to compete. Didn't happen, and then
was his first mistake.
And then he was getting benched because they wanted to play the young guys. Mm-hmm. And then he was traded to the Cavs, which, you know, now he's in a position to compete. But then LeBron leaves.
Right.
So he may be in a position where he wouldn't mind moving on.
Right.
So the question is he wanting to move on to a contender? Or we want to move on to a team that is on an upswing and he may actually be a key cog to that. Right. So that's...
Is he willing to take a Jared Dudley type role? And I don't mean it to that extreme where he's going to play as little as Dudley did, but
I think it'll be with more the concept of,
being he's an older guy who's going to provide tutelage to the younger guys, but he recognizes that when those guys hit their peaks, he's not going to be there.
I think it would be more of a situation of kind of a reason Tyson Chandler's roles. Or Chandler's role in previous years. I mean, obviously this year he's going to be the backup. But, you know, Chandler was the starter to help shepherd Alex Len along. Obviously that didn't work out. I don't blame Chandler on that. And Ariza's kind of being brought in similarly to kind of secure that small forward position and kind of shepherd along the guys behind him. So why can't you do the same thing at the point guard position? It does really start to make us kind of older in the starting lineup, but
sure,
you know, I think it's a move that might make sense both from a roster construction standpoint, also a future looking standpoint for the team.
Absolutely.
Never thought I'd want George Hill on the Suns, but you know, things change.
You know what? Exactly. If it's going to, in the long term and in the short term, I think, you know, be an advantage to the Suns, then so be it. And that's a name that I haven't heard floated out there. And maybe there's a reason for that.
I mean, I've heard it, but I think...
Was it in your head?
No, I've seen it. It's just, for whatever reason, I think it's probably the price tag is, you know, you're looking at guys who are on more reasonable contracts. Mm-hmm. But I think there, in this case, actually having the higher contract could make sense.
Yeah, I mean, especially, it's just like the Ariza contract. Paid $15 million this year, but it's zero next year. Hill's,
right,
for and all intents and purposes, the same thing.
Worst case scenario, you know, it doesn't work out, and they kind of want to blow it up at the trade deadline. But both Hill and Ariza are kind of on one-year deals that should be relatively easy to move. Because they're productive players who another team, like a team that actually is trying for something, may want on their squad. And worst case scenario for that team, player's gone the next year. And it opens up free cap space for them. So I think it would be a advantageous move for McDonough to explore.
I like it, Paul. I like it. Okay. Well, I think we've said all that needs to be said for this particular episode. Unless you have anything else to add?
No, I think I'm good, man.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, as always, we appreciate everybody out there listening. We will get back into a much more regular routine as we're starting to get towards the regular season. Perhaps making a trip up to training camp this summer.
Maybe.
I said perhaps.
Perhaps. I think at the very least we're going to try to make it to the open practice. But I think that's going to be at Talking Stick.
Okay, well then.
Makes it a lot easier. You don't have to drive all the Flagstaff.
Much easier, but it's so nice in Flagstaff this time of year. They got great breweries up there, too.
Do they?
Oh, they do.
It's been a long time since they've been to Flagstaff.
Yeah, they do. So, at any rate, perhaps we'll be there. If we are, we'll let everybody know. And everybody that listens who happens to be in attendance, we can perhaps catch up, enjoy one of those beautiful breweries, and have a few brews together. So anyways, thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it. And as always, depending on when you're listening, have yourself a good morning, good afternoon, or good...
Hey, we forgot
evening.
Our
And you can Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at So Says Jay and Paul.
At Dervish of Whirl.
And you can follow the pod at FanTheFlamesNBA. Do I have to say my whole thing again now? Does that like trigger you? Is that... And as always, depending on when you're listening, thank you for listening and have yourself a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening.
If peeing in your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
That is the grossest thing I've ever heard. Let's go. Just wanna hear-